This should not be this hard. Oh my goodness. Just stop talking.
What's up, guys? Welcome to this week's episode of the No Gimmicks Podcast. I'm Brady Leonard.
I'm Josiah Hughes.
Just bringing it down.
I need to say, I'm trying to find a new way to say my name. Josiah Hughes. Or maybe I should go more for like the Walter Cronkite voice, or I don't know. Still working on it.
We could do some Cronkite. I feel like that would benefit the podcast.
Yeah.
People really respected that guy. I feel like not enough people respect us.
No one is acknowledging our genius, Brady.
I know. It's a struggle. Nobody appreciates our genius, man. Us and Trump alike, we really have that in common. Nobody appreciates it. Maybe it's because I'm Irish. I don't know.
Yeah, you dirty, loudmouth Irish patty.
Guilty. Guilty. Guilty as charged. We'll get to that later in the podcast.
We'll get to that.
That's definitely my favorite story of the week. This week on the show, we have Ben McDonald. Ben is a contributor to Campus Reform and an all-around good dude. He was very generous with his time. Find him on Twitter. Just search Ben McDonald. I forget his Twitter handle. We will plug it later, though, on the show. I promise you. But yeah, Ben is a college student at Gonzaga. And has some great insight into being a conservative in college right now, which honestly seems like a nightmare from where I'm sitting. Yeah. But yeah, Ben was a good dude, and it was a good interview. Hope you guys enjoy it. All right, guys, we were here with Ben McDonald. Ben, thanks so much for coming on the show, brother.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just jump right into some of the news of the week. Obviously, we are a weekly show, so we got to kind of go back a few days here. Me and Josiah were really happy about not talking about Russia. We kind of decided we were not going to talk about Russia until Bob Mueller kind of comes out with some indictments or something is released publicly. But it looks like, unfortunately... and I know, Josiah, your eyes are going to glaze over just thinking about talking about Russia.
We had a
good
break.
We have to talk some Russia stuff.
Yeah, we had a decent break. Yeah, of no Russia talk.
That
was
we had
good.
A good run there for a while. Yeah, for the last year, the media and the Democrats, if there is a difference between the two, have been telling us that Donald Trump is president because he colluded with Russia. It turns out there's probably more information suggesting that Hillary Clinton has colluded with the Russians, both during her campaign and during her time as Secretary of State. I don't know, Ben, how shocked were you, if at all, by this news?
I wasn't shocked at all that Hillary colluded with something. I mean, she'll do anything. She does anything, and she has done anything to get to where she got to by just doing whatever she could, whoever was the highest bidder. And people on the left were mad for Sarah Huckabee Sanders focusing on Hillary Clinton. They're saying she pivoted away from Trump Russia to Hillary. Well, there's actual evidence of Hillary colluding with Russia, whereas it's just all alleged with Trump. And so it's kind of amazing to see them spin it like that.
Yeah, definitely. And this goes back to when Hillary was Secretary of State, you know, millions of dollars were given to the Clinton Foundation from Russia during the exact same time period that the Uranium One deal was being negotiated, that ultimately obviously resulted in Russia obtaining 20% of the United States' uranium supply. And then the new breaking news this week is that we all remember the stupid Trump dossier that accused him of like banging hookers in Moscow and stuff like that. I believe there's urine involved. it turns out that the Clinton campaign and the DNC funded that dossier. So I don't know. It seems a lot more concrete that the Clintons have something to do with Russians, whether it's, you know, illegal or just immoral than Trump. It seems to me like kind of the Saul Alinsky tactic, just accuse your enemy of exactly what you're doing. you know, that's kind of where it reads from where I'm sitting.
And I would wager this isn't all that's going to come out about her in Russia. I would almost guarantee that there's going to be something else. What that is,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, just the arrogance.
I feel like, yeah.
Just the arrogance, if you are in bed with the Russians, to accuse your opponent of being in bed with the Russians is pretty hilarious. I mean, it's not surprising. The Clintons are very arrogant people, but I mean, just the audacity of these folks.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Well, yeah, her tweet yesterday was the most arrogant thing, where she quoted Nate Silver saying, and she said, "Oh, was that today when he said with the Comey letter released?"
Yeah, yeah. Any thoughts on this, Josiah?
I just can't believe how desensitized, I guess I could say, we are to these politicians receiving these huge amounts of money to their quote-unquote charities. It's hilarious. Like, why does no one care about this so much? Like, Russia just dumps incredible amounts of money, or credible amounts of money comes from powerful people in Russia to Hillary Clinton's charity. Same thing goes with Saudi Arabia giving tons of money going into her charity. People who I'm sure are not interested in her charity work. Always around times when she makes certain decisions. Why is this like pseudo corruption? Why is it not just corruption? I don't understand.
I mean, I think desensitized is the right word.
The greatest irony is that the Democrats ran in 2016 of getting money out of politics, and that was their bid. Like, that was Bernie's bid thing, when the Democrats are the most... You see all the money going to the DNC and just funding Hillary, and it's just amazing that they run on that platform.
Yeah, and I believe the Clinton campaign spent something like $400 million more than the Trump campaign. they were loaded. They were spending out the ass.
They really got that money out of politics.
Yeah, they really got money out of politics. I really think people are desensitized, though, to what you said, Joe. Like, I think the Clintons maybe at this point are just such a known commodity. We know that they're corrupt. They've been corrupt for decades. So people just kind of don't care anymore, as sick as that is.
That might be a little bit of a wake-up call. I mean, it's just like the way conservatives, we're just kind of used to Trump being a jerk. So we're just like, it's whatever about it. How his character flaws are. I guess... Democrats are just kind of whatever, used to the corruption of the Clintons. Just like, it's just how it is. That's the price you pay for the end game.
Yeah, definitely.
Of a more socially just world where a few people can be corrupt as much as they want, but I feel better about it.
So we have a clip of Trey Gowdy, Congressman Trey Gowdy from South Carolina, talking about all things Russia. I always like getting his take on anything, any and all things intelligence related. That's kind of his wheelhouse. So let's play that clip of Trey Gowdy on Fox News earlier this week.
The FBI confidential informant has been given the green light by the Department of Justice that he can go ahead and testify in front of a number of congressional committees, including the House Oversight Committee. And the head of that is Chairman Trey Gowdy. He joins us live right now. Good morning to you, Chairman.
Good morning. How are you?
What do you want to hear from this guy?
Whatever he has, it's a really important issue. Uranium is a really important resource. CFIUS, which is the Council on Foreign Investment in the United States, made a decision. I need to make sure they had access to all the information. And if there's an ongoing criminal probe when they're making that important decision, I need to make sure that there are no barriers to their access to information. So talking to witnesses is usually a good thing, and I'm glad the Department of Justice has made him available.
Of course. Apparently, he was giving the FBI information during the Obama administration. They knew about the bribery that was reportedly going on there, and yet the Obama administration went ahead and okayed it. We had Chuck Grassley on the program about an hour ago, and he said he's calling for a special counsel to look into it. Perhaps maybe Robert Mueller is not the right guy to do this, given the fact that he was the head of the FBI, which during the time of this Uranium One deal.
I have tremendous respect for Senator Grassley, and I mean that. That's just not political speak. He's one of my favorite folks on the other side. My view on special counsel is a little different. There's a regulation. There has to be a conflict of interest with the Department of Justice, and none of the other U.S. attorneys can be able to do it. And I don't think we've met that threshold. I think things that ought to be looked into should first be looked into by the Department of Justice. That's who we hire. Those are the men and women that we trust to do it. Special counsels are really unique fact pattern, and I don't know that we've met the threshold for that yet.
Let's talk a little bit about the dossier. Now we know that the Clinton campaign and the DNC financed part of it after a Republican campaign. Apparently, you know, they dropped out. They didn't need it anymore. Does it look to you as if the Department of Justice or the FBI or somebody used the dossier to justify spying on members of the Trump campaign?
Well, we are certainly going to find out. Who financed the dossier is relevant. It's important to some of my colleagues. What's most important to me is whether or not the world's premier law enforcement agency relied upon a piece of investigative work that would make the National Enquirer blush. That's what I want to know, whether or not the FBI relied upon it to launch an investigation and whether or not they relied upon it in court filings.
Reportedly, Hillary Clinton didn't know about it until BuzzFeed published it. Do you believe that?
I'm not a human polygraph. I don't know what she believed, what she
He's
knew or did not know.
Right,
I would find it pretty interesting if her campaign was making decisions at that level that she didn't know about. But I don't have anything to contradict her with other than her past.
All right. Congressman, thank you very much.
Thank you. Y'all have a good week.
I like the nothing to convict her by other than her past.
Yeah.
very dubious. By the way, Trey Gowdy could totally like run for president and win if he didn't look so creepy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he definitely looks like a Bond villain.
His hairstyle changes by the day.
Yeah. I don't know about the hairstyle choices, but
it's a tough haircut. That's a tough haircut if he wants to move past congressman, I will say. So any thoughts on that? I don't know. I think we can move on from Russia, but also today I should point out that Mueller said he has made his first indictment and that information will be released as early as tomorrow, as early as Monday. So we'll see who that is. Honestly, this is where I'm at with Russia. The Clintons colluded with Russia, more than likely. Hard evidence supports that. Also, yeah, some Trump people were in bed with the Russians too. Paul Manafort, everybody knew Paul Manafort was in bed with the Russians. He has been for decades. So can we just, like in football, when there's a penalty on both teams on the same play, they just cancel each other out and then everybody just moves on with the game? Can we do that? Can just be like, all right.
I don't know, man. I think we should do the hockey thing. They both get to sit out.
I think the one difference between them, though, is that it was people who Trump hired and then fired who were working for, who have known ties to Russia, whereas there's evidence whereas Clinton herself more than likely was involved with them directly.
Yeah. Also, though, despite how arrogant the Clintons are and how cocky they are about this sort of thing, they are scandal professionals. So the chances that she doesn't have a fallback person is pretty low. You know, somebody.
Oh, without a doubt. I don't think anything will actually happen to her.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. definitely not. If
I think it's naive to think anything will actually happen.
Yeah, that's right. All right, no more Russia. Hopefully we can just not talk about Russia for another 6 months or something. We really had a good run there, and I don't feel great about breaking our Cal Ripken-style streak of not talking about Russia. But let's move on to my favorite thing that happened this week in the world of politics. This was super racist and wrong, but also hilarious. Newsweek published the most racist article I've seen in a long time from a major publication. Here was the headline, quote, "Why are all the conservative loudmouths Irish-American?" Unquote. Okay. So the article goes on to say, quote, "Once the biggest names, faces, and voices on television were Huntley and Brinkley, Cronkite, Murrow, even John Chancellor and Dan Rather, all sober, serious Americans, and all Protestants, too." So obviously this guy really hates Catholics. I don't know. And then it goes on to say, "Now we have angry loudmouths with names like O'Reilly, Hannity, Buchanan, and lurking back there with his Cheshire smile, the dissolute but scary Bannon." Unquote. Bannon has no power. He's not in the White House anymore. I mean, he has money, you know, and he's getting behind certain candidates that are primarying people and this and that, but he's not that powerful of a guy. I don't think it's gonna work when leftists try to like turn Steve Bannon of all people into like the boogeyman who's gonna destroy the country. Like, I don't know, man. I don't care how much power somebody has. It's really tough for me to be scared of somebody that I could knock out in 10 seconds. Like, come on, Steve Bannon. Not too worried about him.
He has an expensive haircut, though. I can tell that. So
probably eats a lot of expensive food too.
Yeah, a lot. Maybe
Zeke. I don't know. So Ben, what would happen if you replaced Irish Americans in this headline with any other people group? I guess maybe other than the Jews. You're allowed to hate the Jews too. whites and Jews, you're allowed to hate, but anyone other than the Irish and the Jews.
Well, I mean, like, if you put in, what is it, Middle Eastern Americans, right? It'd be called for the authors to quit, and like he'd probably be fired within the week, and it'd be hit every left wing outlet for at least a week, and it'd be endless outrage over it. But since it's Irish American, since they used Bannon as the cover of it, I think it's easier for them to get away with it.
Yeah,
yeah, and which is funny because Bannon's not even a conservative; he's a populist. It's just really funny.
The power that he has is completely overblown. He was won a couple of races, so people think he has some mass power. But he just chooses candidates who might have already won anyway, and he just hitches himself to them, and then he takes credit when they win.
Mm. Well, the Alabama Senate primary is his claim to fame right now. I mean, Roy Moore was going to win that race no matter what.
He was going to win anyway because he has the highest name popularity of anyone in Alabama, maybe.
Yeah, what else you got in Alabama? You don't even got, like, they don't even have a professional sports team. Like, there's...
Yeah, I mean, it's like Nick Saban and Roy Moore.
Yeah, exactly.
Roll Tide and conservatism. That's all you have down there. So I think Roy Moore is going to be just fine with or without Steve Bannon. I don't know, Ben, as a fellow Irish American, I would say that we can both strive to be on Newsweek's list of evil Irish conservatives.
Yeah, I take it as a blessing and a compliment. I mean, just hit me up, Newsweek.
Yeah. Don't forget loudmouth, Brady.
Well, I am definitely a loudmouth. I don't know about Ben, but I mean, I'm a little offended that I'm not on that list. I mean, honestly, I wish some leftists would attack the podcast. We could really use the notoriety. I don't know.
Yeah.
So what the media, the mainstream media, has loved talking about all week is the, you know, the split, if you want to call it that, within the Republican Party. A couple anti-Trump senators, Jeff Flake of Arizona, Bob Corker of Tennessee, have both said that they're not going to seek re-election next year and have basically blamed Trump, saying Trump has corrupted the Republican Party or this and that. I mean, what do you think about this, Ben? I mean, Jeff Flake wasn't going to get reelected no matter what. He has an approval rating of a whopping 18% in Arizona right now, which is by far the lowest out of any senator from either party. So, and he had this horrible approval rating long before Trump happened. So it seems like a little bit of opportunism from Mr. Flake.
Yeah, I mean, he's just using the Trump excuse to make himself seem as a martyr rather than a failure, because there was no way he was going to win regardless. I mean, he might have won the primary, but there was no way he was, I mean, that was even debatable. But there was no way he was going to win with such a, because he just didn't follow up on any of his promises that he promised when he won. Like, he voted for pretty much every, he voted to raise the debt ceiling, he voted for the gain of aid, he voted for, like, he didn't follow anything that he said he was going to, and the constituents are just sick of it.
And you pointed out something to me, Brady, yeah, also, that he kind of has been voting along with what Trump's agenda all along as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's frustrating to me, is that, like, this split within the party, if you want to call it that, I think that's way overblown too. But it's all because of, like, Trump's personality or Trump's Twitter handle, not actual policy. Yeah, both Jeff Flake and Bob Corker have voted with the president's agenda over 90% of the time. So they don't actually disagree with him on anything other than his personality, I guess. So, but the thing is, we've known about, and look, I don't like Trump's Twitter. I know he says a lot of obnoxious things that I disagree with, but we knew that. He's been this way for 30 years. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, every day Jeff Flake wakes up and is shocked that Trump tweeted something inappropriate. Like, he's been doing that every day since Twitter was invented. Like, we need to, at a certain point, these senators at a certain point need to stop being surprised by Trump's tweets and just figure out a way to work with them, even if they don't like the extracurricular behavior. You know, when they are aligned on most policy issues, it's just the personality stuff that gets them.
Well, and Trump doesn't care about the policy, I don't believe, because he doesn't believe that they vote with him. They just blame that they attack him. Like, Jeff Flake wrote a book pretty much attacking Trump, whereas Rand Paul, like, as you said, Jeff Flake and Bob Hoare, they vote with the president, but as Rand Paul doesn't come out and bash Trump, but he votes against him, say, like, with the healthcare bill, where he voted for most of the healthcare repeals. But then now he was standing behind Trump for the executive order, just because he hasn't publicly said Trump is evil and should be disavowed.
Yeah, I mean, Rand Paul went golfing with the president, so they're good friends, even though Rand has voted against just about everything, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, all Trump cares about is, like, you don't call him out personally. He doesn't, I don't think he really gives a crap about
right. The
policy that people vote for.
Yeah. So I want to transition here. The House of Representatives is introducing the tax cut bill, finally, the official bill, on Wednesday. A lot of people are thinking that this split within the Republican Party is going to hurt the tax cut bill. So what do you think, Ben? Do you think this is going to hamper that bill's chances of passing? Do you think it will pass? And if you were in office, would you vote for it? Obviously, this isn't a perfect bill, but we talked about this last week. Me and Joe both think that it is a big step in the right direction. You know, for instance, doubling the standard deductions. That's huge for the middle class. I know me personally, I will save a lot of money with that. So, yeah, what do you think? Do you think it's worthy of being passed? Do you think it will pass? And do you think the nonsense between anti-Trump Republicans and the president himself will damage the bill at all?
So the one thing I think if it does pass, it'll be a narrow vote. But I personally would vote for it just because I think you can't have all what you want all at once. And so I think you have to kind of slowly move the ball on to get what you want. That's what I think the left has been so good at. They just slowly kind of encroach. And then, but yeah, I think if it does pass, it'll probably be just narrowly. But if it doesn't pass, I think it has to do with the fact that, like, people are more worried about opposing Trump on the basis of opposing Trump than actually opposing him on substance.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll see a lot of Republicans voting, or like, you don't have that many of a majority, so they just need a few Republicans to vote against it, and I think they'll get that. So, I mean, I'm hesitant to say it'll pass, but it might.
I think that if this bill is framed as the Republican bill or Paul Ryan's bill as opposed to the Trump bill, I don't think Bob Coker or Jeff Flake will have any excuse not to vote for yes on it. But if it's...
Yeah, and I think if the Republicans were smart, that's how they would go about it.
Yeah.
I think even if... Well, one, Rand Paul already said he'll vote for it, which is miraculous. But I don't know. I think you might get a couple Democrats. It'll pass the House.
And we have a big enough majority in the House that I think it'll pass.
It'll for sure pass the House.
But I think... I don't know, man. If I'm Joe Manchin in West Virginia or Joe Donnelly in Indiana or Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, I mean, these are hard red states. I mean, Trump won West Virginia by 45 points. So if I'm Joe Manchin up for re-election next year and I vote against tax cuts for a state like West Virginia that desperately needs tax cuts, I mean, I don't know. Even as polarized as the situation is right now politically in this country, I have to think there's going to be a couple moderate Democrats that'll vote for it. I mean, just take Joe Manchin, for instance. I don't think he stands a chance in hell getting re-elected if he votes against tax cuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then he just pushes away all his supporters, basically, what he's got left. Because he's not going to get the leftist support, and he's not going to get the Trump supporter support. You know, he's just going to get the normal working class support. And those are the people who are relying on tax cuts the most.
Yeah, there's no way to rationalize to his constituents when him voting against it.
Yeah, that would be tough. I mean, imagine the attack ads against him if he votes against middle class, you know, tax cuts. But I don't know. I think it'll pass. At the end of the day, I think the GOP has to get this done. If this is the only thing they do all year, they absolutely have to. They failed on Obamacare repeal twice. You know, just for good men, just to prove that they're failures, they failed twice. Just to really get it ingrained in the minds of their constituents that they suck. But they have to get this done by hook or by crook. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
They absolutely have to get this done.
Yeah, if they don't get it done,
something to hang their hat on going into 2018. Because right now they don't have anything to say. Oh well, this is what we've accomplished.
Exactly. This will be historically do nothing Congress if this doesn't pass.
Yeah. When was the original do nothing Congress? Wasn't in the 30s or when was it? But anyway, whenever the term was coined, the do nothing Congress, I think this Congress has passed like one third the amount of bills as the do nothing Congress or something like that. I mean, it's really bad, you know, and most of that's from the Senate.
That's nothing at all that's major.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And look, I know everybody hates Paul Ryan, but, you know, in Paul Ryan's defense, the House is getting some stuff done. They are getting some stuff passed. And this all comes down to the Senate. A lot of it has to do with all 100 senators believe they can be the next president. You know, so they only want to vote for something they think is perfect and can benefit them politically, where the House, it's a lot easier to get stuff passed.
Hmm.
And there's a lot to critique Trump on. But I think once it's not his fault that the Senate does nothing and can't pass a bill.
Yeah.
Well, I would benefit greatly from these tax cuts. I know you guys probably would as well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hope and pray they get it done. Ben, let's move on. We haven't had a guest on the show yet that is a current college student, so we want to take advantage of that a little bit. I actually don't really know very many college students. My band doesn't play at colleges anymore. We used to. Me and Josiah are both in bands, and we used to play colleges all the time back when college kids liked rock music. Now they like bullshit like Imagine Dragons and stuff, so it's pretty bad. We don't get invited to play in colleges anymore. But by the way, Imagine Dragons, by far the worst musical group of our generation. I'd rather listen to, I don't know, just Murder on repeat in my earphones than Imagine Dragons. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk a little bit about the free speech stuff going on college campuses. And I want to get your opinion on any experiences you've had. Obviously, conservatives are being, you know, blackballed from speaking on college campuses. And we've all seen the stuff going on, you know, when people like Ben Shapiro speak, or, you know, folks like that. So, you know, what have your experiences been on campus as a conservative? And have you seen your speech or speech of conservative speakers being limited on your campus?
So there's definitely, whenever you say something remotely conservative, you always get dirty looks from, when I come out and say something in class about how we should abolish the UN, and I think the UN's terrible. Right. I hear looks from class like I'm insane. And then moreover, the speakers that come to campus are all pretty hard left-wing, and there's always protests or signs go up about how the college Republicans on campus is bigoted for burning certain people, like Angela Davis, who is a communist Black Panther, came to campus last week. And so the college Republicans here put up a fact checker for just stating what she is, that she wasn't the Black Panthers, how she pretty much bought a gun for someone to kill a judge. And we just kind of listed these facts, and the signs all over campus got torn down because they were offensive, even though it was just facts. And so what you're seeing more on college campuses is students being worried less about coming to get an education and more coming to be activists on campus.
Mm. So literally going to school to have something to be an activist about.
Yeah, I mean, they're not, because the purpose of college, or at least what used to be the purpose of college, was to come and learn different ideas and get educated about ideas. But now people are so enclosed in their boxes that they don't even want to ponder thinking about the other side. And I think it can move people on college. I think you're seeing people on college campuses move further to the right. Like, people who are already on the right, they're moving more to the extreme simply because people are so far left on campuses that it pushes them to that extreme.
Mm. It's like a little bit of a reactionary sort of thing.
Yeah. So you've seen, that's why you see a lot of, the college Republicans are a lot of hard Trump supporters.
Mm.
Just because of all the leftism that's on campus, that they just see that as the outlet.
I imagine that it's probably would be exhausting to be a moderate conservative on college campus. Because then...
Oh, there's without a doubt.
Yeah, because then you have no support from anybody. It's like,
it's absurd.
You know, college, I think that's funny.
It would be a place where you can exchange ideas, and it's become one where you can't anymore.
It's sad. It's sad, man. And I think that's that. what you said about the college conservatives being hardcore Trump supporters, I think that kind of echoes throughout our society, too. I mean, there's a lot of Republicans or conservatives that are hardcore, you know, hardcore Trumpsters that, you know, 4 years ago never would have voted for Trump in a primary.
Yeah.
Or or anything, you know what I mean? Because they're just so sick of the leftist propaganda that they're like, oh, this guy's going to make fun of him. I'm all in on that guy.
Yeah.
You know, where, like, I think, you know, if Trump was running against Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum and Texas Governor Rick Perry, you know, and Ron Paul and all these guys running 4 years ago, or I guess 5 years ago now, Trump never would have gotten the support in that Republican primary. It still would have been Romney or Santorum or Perry, you know. But the fact that, you know, people have been so beaten down by leftism, they find a guy that's going to stand up to it and shoot back, even in his flawed way, I think that makes a lot of people that typically would not support Trump at all get behind him.
I think one of the most prominent examples of this you see on Twitter is Kurt Schlichter. He was a Ted Cruz guy to start, but now he's become very pro-Trump just as a screw to the left. Like, he's just sick of basically the establishment and the left just screwing people and not standing up to the promises that they've made. And so he's just supporting Trump as a kind of screw you move. And I think a lot of people, while I don't fully do that, I understand the appeal of that, just of constantly being let down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. It seems like a cycle of being let down. Politics is the perpetual cycle of being let down. It kind of sucks. And, you know, you want that guy from outside. You know, you're always hoping that guy from outside will come and make a big difference. But, you know, it never seems to really happen that way. It just kind of moves the line one way or another. But to get more onto college campus stuff, man, like, it is really interesting to hear your take, because what is the point of college campuses now if not to find to explore ideas and to learn ideas? You know, I mean, is it just like a pyramid scam so that you can get a job at this point? You know, like, at least I'm sure there's, it's not the case all around, and there's ways you can get around that. But as a lot of people going to school, particularly just because of that? Like, is that what they're in for?
I mean, if I didn't need a degree to get a job, I feel like I probably wouldn't have gone to college. I don't like school itself, but there's few things you can do, or there's fewer things you can do without a college degree than if you have one.
Yeah.
So I think more people just join because they feel like it's obligatory to, and I think trade schools are a good option, but people, they've been kind of frowned upon for so long that people think that they have to go to a four-year school.
Trade schools,
people just go, then they get bored at school, and then
trade schools are tough too because you kind of are you're still kind of blocking yourself into a particular type of job market, and in this modern world,
but if that's what you're interested in, you can still go through a trade school.
Yeah,
if that's the subject you're interested in, rather than a four-year school,
right?
I would venture to guess that less people nowadays know what they want to do with their lives,
right,
by the time they hit college. You know, which would kind of exclude trade schools from their options, because I doubt a lot of... I bet if you go back even 20, 30 years, a lot more 18-year-olds knew what they wanted to do with their lives than now.
Well, I think that's kind of reflective of the more millennials are staying at home, or I think they're starting their lives later.
Yeah, that's true. And also, I think there's always the fact that the job market changes so fast. You know, I work in a trade, and I'm not sure what the trade is going to look like in 20 years, you know? So, like, at some point, I don't know if my trade is going to continue to be able to pay for my family, you know? So there's the ability to be able to be flexible. But the only way you can be flexible and be a really useful human being is if you are exposed to a lot of ideas and a lot of different ways of thinking. Otherwise, you're only going to be useful in a particular field. And it seems like universities are just training people to be effective in universities.
Right. And like me personally, I try not to make my political opinions too known, just because, I mean, like, I'm not quite enough people ask, but I try to just kind of gain different perspectives. And then if someone says, I'll refute something if someone says something I disagree with.
Yeah.
But myself, I just like to see where people are coming from. Whereas I think there are a lot of people who just are focused on their issue and don't care about what other people have to say. They're just like, this is my thing, and anyone else who says something else is wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben, you have like 10,000 Twitter followers and you make your opinions known pretty...
I'm not quiet about it on Twitter. But like in class, I try not to, I just try not to piss too many people off in class, just because I feel like, what good does that do, really?
Right. Yeah, pissing people off just for the sake of pissing them off doesn't necessarily work so much. I mean, that's a prime example.
I'm more than fine pissing people off on Twitter, as I do routinely.
If you know, that's the reason you get on Twitter, is if you want to get pissed off. That's like the main reason.
Or listen to the No Gimmicks podcast if you want to get pissed off too. So another question, Ben, about your experience on your campus. Why the hell is communism so accepted and even celebrated on college campuses right now? The rest of the Western world knows that communism is evil, know that Marxism doesn't work. They know that the communists have resulted in the deaths of 150 million people. Honestly, in my opinion, communism has stayed alive in America all these decades, strictly in the college campuses. You know, I mean, out of academia, everybody knows communism is evil and the most destructive and murderous ideology of all time. Why on earth has socialism stayed alive in colleges all of these years? And it really is mind-boggling to me.
I mean, it goes back to the famous Thomas Sowell quote, socialism has a record of failure so blatant that only an intellectual could ignore it. But I think you see students on college campuses, and I think it starts with the professors, who they don't want to learn the history, and they just kind of disregard. Because, I mean, you open up any history book, and it's pretty obvious. Like, I'm currently taking a class about just different political institutions around the world and, like, the history of them. And when we were talking about Mao, my professor was talking about how he killed, like, tens of millions of people. And that got straws from people in class who were saying that that was wrong. And it was amazing to watch, because it's just a blatant disregard for historical facts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing, dude. That really makes me upset. It's people start defending Mao, and that's, and it just crosses the line for me.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, look, my brother's girlfriend has a degree in constitutional law, and she had to read the Communist Manifesto to get her degree in constitutional law. So that doesn't make any sense. I don't understand. What are we doing?
For one of my classes, the Communist Manifesto is required reading.
Yeah.
For what class?
It's a 20th century political thought. So it's just about the different political philosophers of the 20th century.
That's
and so we're reading for one of the books, we're reading Communist Manifesto.
And that's fair. That's fair if you have something else reasonable that you also get to read. Something.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
I just think it's important to know the counters as well.
Exactly.
Because, like, it's fine to learn it, but then you just also have to know the other side.
Or just have, like, an adult explain to some of these kids, like, why the Communist Manifesto doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So, Ben, we like to end the podcast with something non-political. Something we've been thinking about this week, or it could even be something, you know, a record that you're listening to or a movie that you watch that you really like or a book that you're reading, or the only criteria is that it's not inherently political. So what have you been into this week, my brother?
Well, the basketball season kicked off this week. And so I've been watching a lot of basketball.
Nice.
And I was just like,
who's your team?
The Utah Jazz. I'm from Salt Lake City.
Oh, I gotcha.
So nice. Last night they played the Lakers and there was a dunk by the Jazz point guard that was outstanding. So I just want to, that was probably the highlight of my weekend.
Ricky Rubio, isn't he playing?
Donovan Mitchell. He's one of our rookies from Louisville.
Dude, so I know he doesn't play for the Jazz anymore, but how about that Gordon Hayward injury, man? That was gross to watch.
Yeah. I saw it once. It's a freeze frame of that where his foot is just, it looks like the foot's out of his shoe, but it's foot, it's just sideways and it's brutal.
Do you see when they zoomed in on the Cavs bench right when it happened?
My God. Yeah.
They were falling over and stuff.
Yeah.
Ugh.
The only thing I've seen that matches that level of gruesomeness is the Kevin Ware injury of it. Was it 5-6 years ago? Ooh. Or his shin came out of the, yeah.
Broke the skin compound.
Yeah, I couldn't watch that.
That was gross, man. Dude, I have to say, I do like basketball, but like, for God's sakes, why the hell are all four major sports going on right now? Like, basketball and hockey should wait till the World Series is over. You know what I mean? In like a week.
Yeah.
Because like, you can't have football, baseball, basketball, and hockey all going on at the same time. It's too much. Like, I'm a huge sports fan, man.
Four games.
It's too much.
NBA and NHL seasons are long enough as it is. I mean, I don't think they could probably postpone it a couple weeks.
Yeah. NBA seasons are
probably starting in October and go to June.
NBA season.
I only watch the NBA playoffs. I don't watch the regular season because the season's 9 months long. I mean, that's just aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch every game. I just watch my team a couple nights a week and then the playoffs.
How about just why doesn't the NBA just make their game shorter? Like, go back to 10 minute quarters or whatever. Because like, you were only really interested in that fourth quarter anyway. So let's just hurry up and get to it.
Right.
Come on, man. We're millennials. We need to hurry things up a little bit.
I mean, the NBA season should be like 50 games instead of 82. The baseball season should be like 100 instead of 162. And the NFL should be like 14 instead of 16 games. Like, everything should be shorter. Like, it's out of hand. It's too much. It's too much, man. I love sports, but it's too much sports.
It's going to be your political platform when you run for president, Brady.
Yeah, man. I'm going to run for president. Just promise to shorten the basketball season by 20 games. Yeah. Vote for me. What do you got, Joe?
Oh, dang. I went through, let's see, should I say this or should I say that? It's the dilemma.
Both.
I wasn't supposed to say anything politically charged. So I went through a bunch of my clothes yesterday, and we were going to just drop them off at the Salvation Army, but they're just wanted to throw it out there to everybody that there's nothing wrong with the Salvation Army or Goodwill or anything like that, but there are also a lot of really good nonprofits in your city probably that are helping people out, the homeless and no income and stuff who could use your stuff that you don't need anymore. So just take a little extra effort and figure out who's really doing a great job and go help support them however you can. Don't just depend on the government to take care of everybody. Just put your money where your mouth is.
And that's one thing. We should focus more on private charities and stuff like that rather than making the government our personal charity.
Yeah, we can't. We especially as small government people, like me and Brady are pretty big small government people. You gotta have
big small government.
Yeah, big small government.
That's good.
You can't have small government and a just society if no one is caring for each other. So, you know, keep that in mind.
#taxation is theft. So this week, so there was some UFC fights on last night that I actually did not watch because it was kind of a bullshit card down in like Brazil or something. And there was like a bunch of people that I've never heard of fighting on most of the card.
Oh, that was fight night
the
or
last
whatever?
Couple fights. So I just looked. Yeah, it was a bad card. It was a bad fight card.
Okay, I'm glad I didn't watch that.
Next week, there's an awesome card. Next week, it's GSP versus Bisbing, Cody Garbrandt versus TJ Dillashaw. It's an awesome card. I will be watching next Saturday.
That sounds fun.
Anyway, I did not watch last night, but I saw a clip of the guy in the main event, Lyoto Machida, who's the former UFC light heavyweight champion, one of the greatest of all time. I'm a huge fan of his. His walkout, you know how the fighters have a walkout song as they're walking out to the cage, his song plays, you know, same thing with boxers.
Mm-hmm.
So he walked out to the Game of Thrones theme song, and he proceeded to get knocked out in like a minute. Like, knocked out brutally. It was a terrible knockout. Man, see, he might have jinxed himself with the Game of Thrones theme song. All the good guys die quickly. Like, dude, everyone dies in Game of Thrones. Like, why would you choose that song as your walkout song? Like, all of the heroes get destroyed with a quickness.
Hashtag Red
Wedding.
I
don't know. I think that knockout, like, he's lucky to make it out of there alive.
Yeah.
You kidding me if you're coming out to that music? I just don't think that was smart, man.
Yeah, you should have thought that through. Maybe watch it a little bit more.
I love me some Game of Thrones, but man, I don't know. If I'm going to get pumped up to go fight somebody, I want Game of Thrones as far from my mind as possible because you're just setting yourself up to lose. Oh, man. All right, Ben. Thank you so much for joining us, my man. We have to have you back on soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, man.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be glad to come back.
Definitely. So where can everybody find you online?
Main place would just follow my Twitter at bmatch0507.
All right. And you are a contributor to Campus Review as well. Read some of your stuff. It's really good. Definitely check Ben out there. Follow him on Twitter. He's a very funny guy, very smart guy. And we will have him on soon. And you guys, thank you so much for listening this week. Follow us on Twitter at NoGimmicksPod. And subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. Leave us a good review. If you're not an Apple user, we are on Google Play and SoundCloud as well. We love you. We appreciate you. God bless. We'll be back next week, you filthy animals. No gimmicks.
No gimmicks.